Da fortalte hun at det er dagen for sin fremle. Vi har kjøpt opp alle hikaka. Lubesong.
One day your stepfather ran out of lube. He headed to the liquor store to buy more lube. And that's where he met your mother, who was also buying lube. And it's love that makes the world go round.
Tampa, Florida, America's most romantic city. I'm standing in the apartment of Richard Marx's son, Carl. In my hand is the cassette tape that contained the song that you just heard. In the other room, Richard Marx is making love to my wife. Why did I let Richard Marx make love to my wife? All this and more coming up.
Hi, it's me, Duncan Trussell, host of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. What you just heard is what you can expect if you don't fight back against the National Podcasting Association. The National Podcasting Association are using ancient artifacts to force American podcasters to record intros they don't want to record. I wanted to spend 20 minutes talking about how we're all connected and that we're all one thing and love is the most important thing there is. But instead of being allowed to do that, I had to sing a song about lube. If you don't want to see this kind of fungal creep wreck your favorite podcasts with lewd, lascivious, and vulgar podcast intros, then you must fight back against the American Podcast Association. These depraved sorcerers have the five artifacts of Solomon, and until we retrieve them, then every American podcaster must bow to each of their wicked desires. And let me tell you, their desires don't stop with podcasting. I'll say no more on that topic. If you want to fight back, head to LLM79.com and fill out the petition. We must retrieve the five artifacts of Solomon. We must close the portal. When I was in the Special French Forces, I found myself on the battlefield alone, perched in a small rooftop sniper's nest looking out onto the battlefield. My scope fell upon the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen in my life. I put down my gun and ran to meet her. Yeah, she was in the opposing force, but when our eyes met, it became clear that we were soulmates. We fell into the corn and would have made love, but I was unable to achieve an erection because of the stress of combat. This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by BlueChew.com. That's blue, like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. I'm not going to bore you with some romantic combat story of failed love, but I am going to tell you this. I did try Blue Chew out. I'm not going to pitch some kind of medicine without eating it first for you. And it worked. It worked. As a 45-year-old man, I've experience with this grade of drugs, and I can tell you, it worked. It's way better than that weird shit you buy at the fucking mini-mart that gives you a headache for 4 weeks. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness, like when you get bullied by the pharmacist for buying boner pills and he throws a bottle of Valium in your face and slaps you in front of everyone waiting for their medications. Blue Chew is made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our beloved listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code Duncan. You just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code Duncan to try it free. Blue Chew, it's better, cheaper, faster, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. According to a recent Pew study, 38 people are kept up at night wondering how they could support the DTFH. It's not that hard. All you got to do is head over to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. Also, if you want to help out, support our sponsors because they support the show. Give us a nice rating on iTunes and subscribe. Your support is what is eventually going to bring a high-powered entity to our planet who exists on another beautiful, very colorful realm not that far away. When you subscribe to Patreon, you are going to get extra long, rambling monologues and commercial-free episodes of the DTFH. We also have a wonderful shop located at DougAtrussell.com. Okay, this podcast happened in a really strange, dreamy way. All because of one of my friends, Bharat Das, and strange dreams and synchronicities. The stars aligned, and I got to spend a little bit of time with Johanna Warren, who is got to be one of the most talented folk singers I've ever listened to.
One.
If you like the song you just heard, check out her album, Gemini 2, or go to her website, johannawarren.com. That's J-O-H-A-N-N-A, warren.com. Now, without further ado, everybody, please welcome to the Doug and Trussell Family Hour podcast, Johanna Warren. Johanna, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is so cool. Your music is so beautiful, and it's right up my alley personally. Just the type of music I like. So anytime I get to find somebody like you, and then I found out, of course, that you have toured with Iron and Wine.
Yeah,
which I love.
Amazing.
Them. And so. Your music is in that genre, I guess. What would you call it? Like American folk, like new, what is it called? Is there a...
Oh, I don't know. When people ask me what kind of music I make, I just say like, I write songs and they are what they are. Mm. And I'm like a song mom. Like it's not my job to like judge them before they're born. I just like birth them and then try my best to give them the life that they need in terms of like production. And you never really know what's going to come out, you know? And
right.
I don't like to try to like direct it,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, there's a recurring sound for many artists,
totally.
And sometimes there's artists who transcend that sound or take the risk, like the phases of an artist's life, where they're like, okay, I did that, now I'm jumping into this new place.
Who are usually my favorite artists?
David Bowie being like classic example. Bob Dylan did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a risky, crazy thing to do because you piss off the fans.
Yeah, it really requires a lot of courage. And you've usually, once you've gotten to a certain point in the industry, you've got like pressure coming from management and label to like do the thing that worked already that we know we can make more money on. So on a lot of levels, it's like a bold move. And I really respect that. Anytime that any artist of any modality makes that decision to just throw caution to the wind and follow the current of inspiration wherever it's flowing.
That's a rarity, I think.
Truly.
Yeah, it's a rarity. And I wonder, do you find yourself, because your music has this spirituality wound up into it that's clearly coming from a lot of personal work. Do you find that clashing against the growing realities of your success as a performer and the sort of pressures that are no doubt you're experiencing as you begin to step through that, you know, into the like, I don't know what you want to call it, but it's weird how sometimes
the Matrix.
A career.
Yeah, I don't know. No, honestly, like it's kind of the only like comforting like refuge that I can take in this super chaotic ocean of information and data and opinions and people's agendas. Like I feel like I am so grateful for like my inner world and like my relationship with spirit, like whatever that looks like to me, just knowing that I've cultivated something really true and stable inside myself, that then it's kind of a litmus test against which I can like gauge every decision that needs to be made in my external world. It's like, does this align? Like, is this a yes? Like when I align myself with like the forces in the universe that I want to be working with and working for, like, does this check out? You know, does this person check out? Does this deal check out? You know?
Yeah.
And so it actually has become like a pretty manageable system of decision making, where it's just like, if it's not a full body fuck yeah, then like, it's probably a no. There are some nuanced situations where I can, like, work on it and find the fuck yeah embedded right. in the, like, entanglement of, like, something less than ideal.
Yeah.
Which is a big part of why I'm in LA, actually, to, like, to do that work of, like, having nuanced conversations with people in the industry where there's, like, a lot of stuff that I inherently kind of disagree with on systemic levels. But recognizing that, like, I want to be a part of the collective conversation and, like, to do that in a meaningful way, as I'm sure you know all about, like, you have to know how to work with people, imperfect people, who are sometimes making choices that you don't necessarily agree with, but that you can kind of, like, wisely, masterfully align yourself with the parts of them that you do align right. with truly, you know? Does that make sense?
Absolutely, it yeah. does. Yeah, this is a thing I'm discovering being married, which is that there needs to be a constant reminder that we're on the same team.
Yes.
And that underneath whatever it may be, there's real deep love.
Yes.
And the moment I drop into that, it just works. And then, and of course, I can extrapolate from that the identical realization with anyone I'm collaborating with, which is the moment you start thinking me, you,
yes,
sort of in some weird struggle over creating this thing or that, then it becomes like hellish
totally.
Almost. But the moment you realize, oh, we both had moms and we both want to make something that looks great in the world,
we're in this together.
Yeah.
And I feel like just across the board, that's like the big collective paradigm shift that needs to happen if we're gonna like survive on planet Earth as a species in any kind of way that I want anything to do with. It's like we need to evolve out of the like me against you mentality and be like, it's like all of us, not even just all of us humans, but like all of us Earth beings. And so, like, are the choices that I'm making in alliance with that mission statement? Or am I still running some old paradigm program of, like, me against everyone else?
Well, David Nichtern, who I work with, he teaches me about Buddhism meditation. One of the things he said is, like, you know, sometimes when you cut the chicken's head off, its body still runs around.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that sometimes, like, even when you start working at this mission, as you're calling it, you're still dealing with the momentum of all the moments prior to that simple shift in thinking of like, oh, I don't need to win this game, or that winning the game as we've been taught usually means losing the game. Like, it's a weird game because the way to win is to lose sometimes.
Yes,
and not to be the one out that is like climbing on top of everybody. And
right.
That doesn't work.
Yeah, it's like you have to accept your like utter annihilation and defeat in the old paradigm in order to like succeed and thrive in the new paradigm, which is like kind of, as far as I can tell, like a non-competitive collective, like if I win, we all win, because if we're all sharing the same vision where like everyone is here for a sacred purpose and I want to like invest my faith and energies into a future in which everyone gets to express that and live that, then like we literally, no one can win unless we all do.
Do you find that because of your, you know, when you're a performer, the structure of performance is aesthetically hierarchical?
Oh my God, yeah.
Right?
I think about it all the time. And I do what I can to, like, actively subvert that. Like, I really love playing house shows. And that's actually intentionally sort of the realm that I have like cultivated my practice, because it's, you show up and you're just a guest at the party. And like sometimes you kind of have to like sneak off into a back room and like get in the zone. But I really like hanging out with people, like especially after, like just talking and being available for like conversation and processing. And just because like I was such a fangirl when I was a kid and would just go to shows and be this speck in the ocean before these demigods up on stage and just being like, who are they? How did they come here? Like, how do you possibly like get on the other side of that bubble?
Yes.
And then actually, yeah, like my experience with Iron and Wine was like right out of the gates before I had done any solo touring, I got like picked up as like a backup singer for this like 13-piece iteration of Iron and Wine and like toured the world with them for a year.
Wow.
So my first touring experience was like 2 mega tour buses and like the nicest, oldest theaters around the world. Wow. And like audiences of thousands. So to get to like experience that, like kind of a bit vicariously, like it was like doing it with training wheels, like someone else's project. I'm there to like blend into the background. It's not like my thing, but yeah, still to get to experience what that feels like and see like on the other side of the bubble was like so profoundly educational and like such a gift in so many ways. But one of the things that I did notice was that even at that point, which, you know, it was like 7 years ago, but even at that point, a lot of people, like, you know, were on their phones in the crowd and like had paid a lot of money to be there, but then weren't really having anything that resembled like an authentic personal experience.
Right.
So it like planted some seeds in my mind early on of just like, how is there another way to do this? Like where we can really be like collectively like experiencing something authentic and like, you know, just like deep, like dropping into a state of like deep presence with each other. Because I think, you know, the music industry in some ways is just really fucked. Like, it's just all about like how many bodies can we cram into the same space so that we can sell as much beer as possible.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
It's crazy.
God, that's a real, to me is just so, that when you start understanding that the money is not primarily being generated from the ticket sales, but is being exponentially exceeded by the booze sales.
Yeah.
And really you're like essentially a lure,
yes,
to get people to go to a bar.
Yes.
That is shocking moment.
Revelation. Yeah. It made me mad. Now I'm just kind of like laughing at it from outside of it. I'm like, wow, that's weird.
Yeah. But I want to talk a little bit more, and I don't want to like spend a ton of, I love talking about music and like the business of music, because I don't understand it very much. There are a few things I've always wondered about professional musicians, and so I want to ask you.
Okay, I may be the wrong person to ask, but I'm happy to.
I don't think you are.
Chime in, okay?
Because you know, I listen to your music. It's so heartfelt. It's so soulful. It's so beautiful.
Thank you.
And it's clearly coming from like deep emotions and deep vulnerability. But you've got to do that after driving somewhere, after getting, you know, having to like fill the car up with gas and figuring out like, when do I have time to take a shower? When do I have time to do this? When do I have time to do that? And then you have to like become a conduit to that space you were in.
Yeah.
And that energy that came into you that inspired this song again and again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
How is that done? And what do you do when it just isn't there?
Oh, God. I think like everyone has their own strategies and coping mechanisms. And a lot of people rely on drugs and alcohol to like make it bearable, because it is like being a touring musician is like a pretty brutal path. And like I personally feel like, you know, that was like an option for me for a while, like just going down the route of just like numbing myself and being in like a cycle of like substance abuse.
Which and substances?
Mostly just alcohol for me and weed, you know, just kind of like, it's a lot to handle and it's a lot of discomfort to hold in your body, like just sitting in a car for like 7 hours a day and then sleeping on a floor, you know, it's like, it can be really a lot. But I've recently, like the last couple years, really been leaning into like mystical yogic practices, really, of just, you know, like really using the time in the car to like be circulating energy throughout my body and meditating while I'm stuck in traffic, and like finding ways to create internal center and stability, like when everything around me is changing.
Everyone needs a great pair of wireless earbuds, but before you go dropping hundreds of dollars on a pair, you need to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and they sound just as amazing. The company was actually co-founded by Ray J. Celebrities like Melissa Etheridge and Cardi B are obsessed with them. Raycon's E50 wireless earbuds have totally changed the game. They're so comfortable and so easy to take anywhere. Unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet with no dangling wires or stems. And of course, they don't just look great, they sound great too. Raycon offers their wireless earbuds for everyone in a range of fun color and at an unbeatable price. Go to buyraycon.com/Duncan to get 20% off your order. That's buyraycon.com/Duncan for 20% off Raycon wireless earbuds. If you've been eyeing a pair, now is the time to get this amazing deal. One more time, buyraycon.com/Duncan. I like their beautiful earbud sarcophagus. They come in this like sweet, beautiful little case, as though you're holding an ancient, beloved artifact that you found beneath a pyramid. Thanks, Raycon.
And I'm like alone a lot of the time. Like, I've driven myself around the country in a van by myself and like played shows pretty much every night for like 3 months. Like, and that experience was just like, I've never felt so close to God, you know? You're like in one way just like in this like durational trust fall with the universe.
Whoa.
You know, like,
yes,
people are like, you know, I get like a lot of comments, especially like as a young woman, like a lot of people are like, oh my God, like you're so brave for doing that, like how do you survive? And I'm like I've actually had really beautiful experiences across the board, like just getting to receive like people's generosity and kindness and just good human stuff, you know. But in the times that it has felt dangerous, I realize that it's really like a projection of my own internal state. Like when I am in a state of internal chaos, like I attract chaotic events. And when I am like resting in a place of like peace and stillness, like everything is just so gentle. And that's, you know, it's a big generalization, but it feels really true for me at this point based on like a decade of experience living this way. It's like it's kind of a brutally honest mirror for me to look into of just like, am I aligned? Am I taking care of myself?
Right.
Are my energies organized? And if they're not, like, the universe like fucks with me, you know? And like the character has become increasingly like sketchy and nefarious, you know?
Yeah.
It's like direct feedback.
Direct feedback. Mm-hmm. And that is so like, this is a experience that I think the moment you just start catching on that that's happening,
mm-hmm.
you're doing great.
Yeah.
Because before you catch on that that's happening, your life feels chaotic, completely
out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you realize like, oh my God, what is this? And mm-hmm. I go back and forth. I think the most, the least woo-woo-y explanation for it must be that we're just seeing our projections and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you, you know, go into a house of mirrors
mm-hmm.
and you're dressed like a skeleton, you're gonna see a lot of skeletons.
I love that.
But in this case, in this house of mirrors, the skeletons actually they do their own thing and they're covered in other people's skin and they can be really quite terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And then when I get woo-woo-y about it, I think, oh, I guess we're just like, this is a, you know, where we're at neurologically, we can't understand yet that we are constantly traveling through parallel universes based on the rudder of our energetic
state. It's so real. Like, that's been such a, like, frequently occurring experience in my recent times of just, like in real time, like, feeling this, like, level shifting. Like, if I say, like, the first time I really noticed it.
Yes?
The first time I really noticed it, I was on a road trip with my friend and I had been like experiencing like kind of financial hardship, but nothing too extreme, but I just like, I was stressed out and I stopped to fill the tank. We were driving their car and like I was putting gas in the tank and then I said like, I was going to fill it up all the way, but then I was like, can I just put in 25? I'm like really broke right now. And those words came out of my mouth and I just felt everything around me, like all the like blocks of the matrix, like just ka-chunk, 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 like shoots and ladders, like back to the bottom of the board. And it's like, all right, you said it. Like, we will make it so right now. And then I was like really struggling for months. Like it took me a while to like undo that spell that I cast on myself.
Wow. And it is it is a spell. Do you practice magic? Do you have a, what can you describe? You were talking a little bit about exercises you were doing to sort of energetically align yourself when you're driving. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what, if you had to encapsulate your practice, how would you describe it?
I identify as a mystic just because, like, I feel like I've had direct experiences with, like, divinity from a young age in ways that fell completely outside of any, like, religious dogma. And I've always pretty, like, I have this, like, really rebellious rejection muscle that flexes whenever anyone tries to tell me how to do something, especially when it comes to, like, my relationship with God. Because I'm like, I got it. Like, thanks. Yeah. I just, like... you know, dreams are a huge part of my experience. Like, I'm just like, from a young age, I've just been kind of gifted these like visionary states. But
like,
can
you be a little more detailed about that?
Yeah, for sure. Like the dream visions.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the most striking actually have come from, I'm type 1 diabetic. And so, and part of that is like extreme hypoglycemic states where your blood sugar is super low and your brain function is kind of cutting off. And I hypothesize that like a lot of DMT is being released because it's like you're in this liminal, like kind of near death, like near coma state.
Yeah.
So when that happens in the middle of the night while you're asleep, it like, for me, it has tripped my brain into like these states of just like experiencing death in these really beautiful ways. Like the first time it happened, I was probably like 10, and I just like came to in my dream standing in this invisible doorway that's like floating in this like ocean of light and color and sound. Like the music that I could hear was just like the most beautiful shit I've ever heard anywhere. And I was just standing in this doorway and I was just like, there was this consciousness, a conscious awareness that like, this is death. I'm like experiencing death right now. And it's beautiful. There were like, there was like waves of like brown mud and then like ethereal butterflies. And it was just like everything, you know?
Wow.
And then, and at some point I realized like, oh, I need to wake up and drink some juice. But
how close to death were you in that place? Like, what were you? Could you have gone into a coma?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can die. Jesus. Like, it's, yeah, it's a super like mystical disease in that way. Like, you're kind of like traversing liminal realms all the time.
All right.
Yeah. So that I do attribute that partially to like just kind of this like contact that was made at an early age with like the other side, the great beyond.
That is very young to have to deal with your own mortality and the reality of how you can't, you could potentially just fade out
totally
from this part of the dream.
Yeah, it's super interesting. Yeah, I mean, like, and it wasn't actually my first near-death experience. Like, I was kind of like, like, I don't know, just like jumping into the deep end of pools when I was 2 years old and just like kind of always walking this line.
Yeah.
And that was actually I've only sat with ayahuasca a couple times, but the most recent time, like I had this really intense experience where like everything got really fucking dark all of a sudden, like just like the deepest, darkest blackness I've ever seen. And then all these little skulls come out and like line up and just start rattling.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is the end. Like my heart was like pounding and I thought I was going to die. And then this like really calm, like sexy grandmother voice comes in and is just like, baby girl, you've been walking this line since you were a child.
Wow.
And this is the shaman's path. And like, it was kind of cool. It was like sort of like an invitation, like if you want to come to Peru and like study jungle medicine, like you're invited, but you don't have to. Like you can keep doing whatever you're doing and like bring this into that.
Yeah.
Like the shamanic resonance.
Was this happening on your plant medicine tour?
No.
So I was wondering that. So that the plant medicine tour was literally not, it's not like when we most of us, when we hear plant medicines, we're thinking like a very
entheogens.
Few. Yes,
yeah.
That's right. So the Euro Plant Medicine Tour is actually a exploring real like medicinal plants, not just the entheogens.
Yeah, herbalism. Like there were definitely some like CBD and THC products, but you know, it was mostly, it was not like I was like facilitating ayahuasca ceremonies.
Okay.
It was really, I was just like aligning with local herbalists and biodynamic farmers in every city that I visited and just like inviting them to be at the shows, like selling their tinctures and teas and signing up for CSAs and just to like connect communities.
What's a CSA?
Community supported agriculture.
What is that?
It's like, so if you're like an organic farm, you can ask people in your community to sign up for like a share of what you grow, and it's delivered usually weekly.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That's pretty amazing.
So you don't have to go to the farmer's market. They just like deliver you a box of like whatever's in season.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I didn't mean to divert from this encounter with some kind of intelligence that's trying to lure you out into the jungle to show you something, which is seems like that a lot of people are getting that signal these days.
Yeah. Well, a big part of those messages for me that have come from ayahuasca, which as an herbalist, I had a lot of resistance to participating in that culture, actually, because I'm like, I'm interested in what grows locally and abundantly in our backyards. But ayahuasca is such a specific spirit. And like, I feel like when you hear the call, like you should heed it, you know? Mm. And especially for me, like I'm dealing with a chronic condition in my body that Western medicine is just like, you're fucked. Like take this synthetic hormone for the rest of your life and give us like $1,500 just to stay alive every month, you know?
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm kind of on this like radical mission to like find alternatives and see what can be done through like magic. And
or it's do you have insurance or is that like?
Yeah, I have like Oregon based Medicaid. So it's kind of an ongoing nightmare. Like I've actually been getting my insulin in Mexico because
I saw you post about that. And yeah. I thought, oh my God, not that Mexico is bad or that, you know, insulin in Mexico or whatever. It's just like the fact that we're having to do that insanity. Yeah. Right now, and that companies feel okay charging that much. And when you see like the various prices in different parts of the world, it's really a dark, dark flower growing from the weird tree of capitalism that somebody could actually say, look, it's a business. Okay. It's a business.
Yeah. We don't give a fuck about your health, even though we're your health insurance company.
It's not our problem.
Yeah. Not our job.
We want to make money. Yeah. Yep. Right. And it's such a sad, hollow way to live. Mm. It seems like, and I'm sorry that you're having to deal with that. Are you able to buy a bunch of it when you go to Mexico, or does it keep okay? Or
yeah, if you have like a freezer pack, you can. It'll last up to like I think the manufacturing company says it's good for like a year if it's refrigerated. So that's what I've been doing, just stockpiling and waiting for America to figure its shit out.
Which I think is going to happen.
It has to.
Well, I mean, this is always the weirdest part of evil or whatever you want to call it, is evil and dumb are synonymous in this sense, you know, in the sense, I don't mean that all dumb people are evil, but I mean, there's a certain.
Maybe ignorant.
Okay, like, let's say ignorance then, fine.
Because I know a lot of really sweet dumb people.
Oh, okay, sure. Fine. I hope I end up being one of them. I consider myself dumb, so I'm sorry for the dumb people of the world if I seem like I was like, I didn't go to Stanford. Let's just put it like that. But what I meant is like in movies, you know, evil is always made to be somehow like really somewhat intelligent, clever, plotting, planning. But then when you see it, it always seems like ridiculously blunt in the sense that if you overcharge long enough for a medicine, there is going to be some kind of uprising that is going to, all down the road, mess up your business and cause people to get so mad at you and cause regulations to come into place that you're going to end up losing more money, maybe. I hope. I pray.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's like an intelligence of the heart that is lacking. You know, you can be like scheming in your brain and they're right. Like they don't have to, it's not profitable for them to like want to cure a disease like type 1 diabetes. Like they're killing it. But at some point, and I feel like that's where like just the collective paradigm shifting comes into play. It's like, it's evolution. Like I take great comfort in knowing, in believing in evolution and knowing that, like, we are part of nature. And, like, as of now, there's, like, this tremendous imbalance and, like, humanity is growing like a cancer on the earth, but, like, nature knows what to do to, like, rebalance herself. And, like, what that looks like, I think, is, like, humans developing, like, psychic ability and, like, remembering how to, like, think with their hearts and their bodies and get out of the, like, scheming Dr. Evil, like, money-based left-brained approach, you know?
I want to talk about the idea that some of these ailments that have plagued humans for as long as there have been humans actually have cures in existence right now,
mm-hmm.
that we don't even know about.
Yeah.
Because they're happening in the jungles, they're happening off the mm-hmm. map. And it seems like this is what you're being called to sort of explore
totally.
And to work with. But, you know, when my mom was dying, she went to see John of God. And you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah,
the faith
totally.
Healer who ended up being a complete fraud, obviously, yeah. scamming people. I think he was a rapist.
Wow.
He was like a, literally every bad thing you could imagine about him, he did. And I remember the hopefulness that my mom mm-hmm. had when she went to see him. And I remember, like, the secret, underneath all my cynicism, the secret mm-hmm. hopefulness I had.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, well, who the fuck knows? Maybe it works. I've heard that people went there and were healed. And anyway, it didn't work.
Right.
He actually said to her, you will not die of cancer.
Mm.
Now, he couldn't have been more wrong.
Mm.
And so, though I do grok that there is gotta be other solutions than the ones that are currently on the map, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I also get real nervous.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's so much room for not just exploitation,
totally.
But for lack of self-care.
Absolutely.
Disguised as self-care when you're
absolutely.
Just using. So what give me some hope. What is the place where that isn't happening in the world?
Inside yourself. Like, I think I get really nervous when anyone is asking you to invest faith in them as your healer. Because, and that's, like, even with my first ayahuasca experience, actually, like, I showed up and the, like, quote-unquote shaman, like, I almost just turned right around because I was like, you're not a shaman. Like, you are, like, a 23-year-old Brazilian man who, like, plays guitar pretty well. And, like, he's,
right.
like, kind of, like, looking at the floor, like, doing the kind of bashful, like, indie rock shtick of just, like, like, thanks for coming, you guys. And I was like, what? This is not, like, shamanic space holding. Like, I think I need to go. But then I was like, okay, like, actually, like, I drove, like, 6 hours to be here, and I need to have a good experience right now, and I know how to facilitate that for myself, and I know how to, like, tune out, like, 80% of what's happening in the room around me. And, like, you know, I've heard some really scary stories, actually, about people going to the jungle. Like, I actually just met this guy on tour who, like, I mentioned that I'd done ayahuasca, and he, like, freaked out. He was like, never do that again. Like, I spent, like, a year of my life, like, in the jungle, and the people I was working with were brujas, you know, they were, like, harvesting human souls, basically. And that's a thing. Like, that's actually a thing that people do.
What do they do with the souls?
You, like, use it for their own power, I guess. You know, it's like this, like, people die. Like, people, like, there are some shamans who are, like, operating, like, not in a purely aligned and of the light kind of way, and, like, using human energy to, like, as in their own dark sorceress practices.
Yeah, you know? Isn't it? See, this is, to me, the really kind of weird thing about being a Westerner.
Yeah.
Is people have this crazy idea that it's like a small world ride everywhere you go. It's
right.
like, and that things work according to the way we understand it here.
Right.
And so these people are going over there
mm-hmm.
and they're like, oh, you know, it's like the cool part of the small world ride.
Right.
It's going to be completely safe. I'm going to have some kind of, like, cool, wild experience.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll find myself or there'll be something, but I know it's pretty much going to be safe.
Yeah, because I'm a white person and I paid $6,000 to be here. You know, like, yeah. Who would take advantage of me? You know,
who would ever take advantage of me? Meanwhile, it's a completely different metaphysical ecosystem out there.
Yeah.
We have this crazy hubris in our scientific materialism. For most people, they don't even know the word sorcerer
totally. When
they go over there. They have no idea who they're working with.
Yeah.
They spend less time thinking about who they're going to be slurping back a potent brew that's going to allow you to travel through the astral realms than they do about where they're going to eat.
Totally.
P.S., as far as I'm aware, and maybe this would be something someone out there could make for us, a Yelp for shamans.
Oh, my God.
Because there's no credentialing system. And I don't know how many times I've met varieties of the emo dude mm-hmm. who's like, I'm a shaman.
Yeah. And it's like, no, you're not.
Oh, are you? Really? Because it's like, and to me, the other part of it, which is some kind of, I don't know what you would call it. But it's like, if I go to get my, I don't know, appendix removed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
I just got my appendix removed. Now, if I met someone on the street who's like, listen, I do basement surgeries, and I'm going to teach you, like, here's how you do it. Cut here, cut there, pull it out, put the thing in, and then sew it up. Maybe you could say I'm a surgeon in a Civil War sense. Like, if it was the apocalypse, I think I could sew you up. But these people are going over to these places where the tradition is one of, where it's so intently studied, it's like medical school.
Yes. Well, yeah, because the energy body, I mean, the subtler layers of the body, which is like all energy, is like every bit as real as your appendix. And people who cultivate that awareness and know how to work on those planes are like actually doing real things to your body. And I think that's just like so not a part of like how most of us are trained to think about things.
No.
It's just all like fun psychedelic tourism. You know, it's like we don't want to think about the fact that people actually die. We don't want to actually do the like dietas to like purify ourselves before engaging with this intense plant medicine, even though like we receive the email like protocol 2 weeks in advance. It's like, do not eat red meat, do not drink alcohol, do not have sex. And we're just like, yeah, but I'm white, you know?
They don't mean red wine.
They don't mean sex with my boyfriend.
Yeah, they're talking about, like, sex on ecstasy or something. Yeah, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
and then they go there. And then, but then also, there's another thing that happens, is that people go over there who have bipolar.
Yeah.
And they have manic episodes, and then they will hurt themselves.
Yeah.
Literally commit suicide, like, hurt mm-hmm, themselves. Mm-hmm. And this to me is like, and I don't mean to take things on a dark course here, but I love psychedelics. And because I love psychedelics, I have many friends who love psychedelics. And also mm-hmm. I have people who will convey their stories of psychedelics to me.
Yeah.
And the only one that I keep hearing crazy shit about is ayahuasca.
Yeah.
It's the only one that's like putting people into states of consciousness that are hospitalizing them.
Yes. Well, you know, I think a big thing about it is like what I said before about like, you know, it grows in the Amazon. We're not in the Amazon. Like, I think in general, like as an herbalist, I really like interacting with plants on like a spirit level and like a personality level. And like, who are you? What are you offering? And like, what is like, what are your requirements for like a healthy relationship? Because like she especially is like a badass bitch, and she's like, this is how I like to be approached. This is how, like, if you approach me this way, I will fuck you up. Like,
yeah.
I might fucking kill you, you know, because like it's it's like you wouldn't call like a car mechanic and be like, hey, my toaster's broken, you know, like you got to know who to call, like, given like what you're working with. And ayahuasca I think is like an incredibly potent healer and like tool for certain conditions.
What conditions?
Well, I mean, I gotta say, like, what I'm dealing with, like type 1 diabetes, where it's just like I've looked so many places and there's like not any promising info out there for like, or like stories of anyone reversing it. But like ayahuasca, like my experiences with that plant medicine are like fucking intense. Like, it's like psychic surgery and like really like above and beyond any experiences that I've had on you know, mushrooms or anything that's like locally available here, you know, and that's like why I've allowed myself to, with great reverence and respect, like approach that plant.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, you know, if there was something growing here that like was offering similar properties, like I would go to that, but it's not. So, and I've felt like invited by her, you know, like she found me in dreams and was like, there's something here for you, and like come talk to me. And I gotta say, like, you know, I totally hear you in everything that you're saying about just the dangers of it, and it's not like I'm not like broadcasting saying like, hey everybody, go do ayahuasca. It's like actually quite the opposite.
Yeah,
I'm like, I think the amount of people doing it is like a like disaster and a travesty, and like there's nothing okay about that. And the circles that I've sat in, like the psychic energy of those spaces and those people have like deeply freaked me out and disturbed me. Like when people start making it like kind of an addictive ritual practice, I'm like, this is not what this plant wants, or how she presented herself originally, you know.
Well, welcome to America.
Yeah, 2019.
Welcome to America, ayahuasca. Woo! You know, yeah. It's like, wait, 50 years, you'll buy it at 7-Eleven. There'll be an ayahuasca dispenser. But this is sort of the, I think this is one of the interesting things about interconnectivity and also the beginning of this like incredible sort of centrifugal like mixing that's happening, where we're seeing like the interim states. I think one of, you know, some of my friends are really offended by the way Buddhism is being monetized,
right.
And some of my friends are really offended by the sort of careless way that people are invoking using magic. And then, you know, there's always this sense of like, this is a sacred thing.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're doing. And if you do it the wrong way, at the very least, you're being rude. You know, at the very most, you're going to hurt yourself.
Yeah.
And, but I just think we have to get through that part. And so, you know, one of the things I love about, Buddhism is it's going to grow in whatever soil it lands in, and the way it's going to grow is it's going to warp into whatever the ecosystem happens to be where it lands. I think that's why it's such a perfect religion for the times that we're in, and that when people are like, they're the mindfulness people are making money off of the Dharma. And it's like, actually, I think if Buddhism is really going to meet the West, that it's going to take money. It's going to take all the components that people are like using as their religion, which in the West, that is, for a lot of people, it is, we're entering an a-religious period, or people are pretending they're not religious when they're worshiping
the dollar,
the money. The money, it's money, and all the stuff that comes from money, and all their relationship with money is very religious. It's a religious attitude.
Totally.
Because, you know, many people, I could like throw a crucifix on the table and say, incinerate it. Let's set it on fire. We'll put some, if I put a $20 bill on the table, they're going to treat it with the reverence they would, you know, a religious item. It's paper. Both of them ultimately, you know, meaningless.
Have you seen The Holy Mountain?
Yeah, it's been a while.
That's like the first thing he gets everybody to do on his like spiritual quest team. He's just like, bring out all your money, and, like throw it in the fire.
Yeah.
Like, step one.
Step one.
If you want to climb the Holy Mountain.
Yeah, you got to burn your money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a funny thing. I mean, I think, you know, it's illegal, so I'm not saying do it. But if you did want to do it, an illegal act, which you shouldn't do, if you really want to feel it.
Yeah.
If you want to do some blasphemy. And I think people are hungry for blasphemy. You know, like it's we want to blaspheme, and there's something quite nice about blaspheming. And so before we had the Black Mass, you know, and it was like, this is great. You break into a church, you fuck on an altar, you like desecrate, and you do this awful, stupid shit, which is really just another, it's just Christianity, let's face it. It's like another form of Christianity, but it's like all the oppression you've experienced in the like your infinite contact with patriarchal piggies who are telling you how to act, or you go to hell, they're fucking your kids. You just get to blow off all the steam, and you eat. I think you eat cum, and that's the communion. When I'm doing, and, but now it's like you can't. I'm sure there's places where you can go and do that, like as a party or something. You mm-hmm. know, it's not so intense at all. In fact, yes. I think I've heard of clubs in LA where you can do that, and it's like whatever. Right. There's nothing there to blaspheme anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But burning money,
yeah.
Having a black mass with currency.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of brings to mind like FinDomming, financial doms.
Who, yeah.
Like people are like paying good money to be financially humiliated and like yeah. be robbed. It's like just like wear stilettos and like stand behind me and like make me take out all my money from this ATM and like you can just keep it. I feel like it is this like interesting karmic like leveling of the scales. Nature is taking care of it.
Yeah.
Also, did you see recently like a rat in India? Like there was like an ATM that was like out of order mysteriously for like a week, and then they finally opened up, and there was a rat who had just like eaten like $500,000.
Good for that.
Gorged himself. Yeah. Like of course it's like a rat in India. Like
that sounds like a Twilight Zone episode. Like so that sounds like a bad genie wish or something. Like I'll give you $500,000, but you're a rat. You eat money. Well, So, but to get back to the ayahuasca blasphemy, or specifically the DMT blasphemy,
which is my mind
does go there. My mind, like, with a lot of the psychedelics, my mind does, and only just because I've been spanked so many times for doing it the wrong way, that it's just like, it's pragmatic to treat it respectfully.
Yeah.
But then also there's another part of me that thinks, well, maybe the idea is not for me to try to imagine that the West is going to suddenly become respectful of the sacred qualities of nature, but really realize that that just isn't going to happen, that there's a disconnect that's happened with the earth, and that the way to reconnect is not going to be to get people to act differently than the way they're already acting as they approach this thing or that thing, whatever it may be, whether it's Buddhism, ayahuasca. I think we're entering into an age where we must find solutions that are based on the world as it is,
right?
Not the way it could be.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting because like in some ways I feel like I spend a lot of time like encouraging myself and others to like think optimistically and like towards like, you know, visions of the future that they're really psyched about living in. And like I think it's both. Like I think it's like accepting things as they are with an understanding that like within each of us as we are, there is actually like a sincere desire to do better and feel, and like learning how to like really, you know, not be stupid about it, not like assume that people are gonna like magically like have some like massive spiritual awakening overnight and like just do everything differently, but like knowing like, you know, we're all full spectrum beings and like we're all like really fucked up and doing stupid horrible things all the time, and like we're children of God and like we want to like find our way back to Eden, you know. That sounded so much more Christian than I am.
Well, I mean, you actually, you know, I love the story of Eden, and I especially all of the mystical inaccessible geographical locations that appear in mythology.
Yes.
Valhalla, Shambhala. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, these places, and Burning Man, which seems to be, to me, I sometimes think of it as a very temporary incarnation of one of these mystical cities.
Wow, I love that.
There's not enough like energy to support it in this part of the universe, so it sort of can only last for a certain amount of time. But it does seem like it's probably one of the legendary cities or the shadow of one of those cities.
I love that.
Black Rock City. But the does not sound very mystical when you hear it, but when you see it, it is. Yeah. Anyway, I think what you're saying, which is finding our way back to that place.
Yeah.
And is part of it. And the other part of it is thinking like, okay, we really, a lot of people, I pretty much across the board, whether you're talking to a scientist, a shaman, a cleric, priest, a mystic, anyone across the board, it's rare that you might find people who are going to say, oh, everything's perfect. That doesn't mean
we don't have work to do.
We're not dead.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean the planet's not going to die. Yeah. It doesn't mean the experiment worked, as if the experiment meant that humans were going to find harmony with nature, but everything's perfect.
Right.
No one looks at a black hole eating a star and is like, oh God, look at that evil black hole destroying the star. It's perfect.
Yes.
So, but usually what you're going to get is people saying like, well, here's what's happening. It's the age of Kali Yuga. It's the apocalypse. We're entering the great time of change. We're entering a time of great turbulence. We're entering a time of unsustainability. We're going to run out of the soil isn't going to support food. We're going to run out of oil. We're going to run out of bees. We're going to run out of some primary insect that fucks the food chain up to the point that food stops growing. And then we're going to see massive, massive, massive death.
Yeah.
And that's one of the pathways to paradise, unfortunately, is a massive die-off.
It is probably necessary.
I think that's unfortunately one of I don't think it's necessary at all, but I think that it's kind of like one of those things where you don't want the boss to show up to do the job. You know, ever.
You avoid it, yeah.
Like, and especially if you've been getting like email after email after email after email after email.
Like asking you nicely, then like a little less nicely.
Yeah.
And getting pretty harsh.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So the worst thing that you want is for that to step in. And, you know, look at we're like sitting on top of massive oceans of lava. It's not as though the Earth, if the Earth is a superorganism, couldn't get a fever and couldn't do the exact same thing we do to whatever part of our biome is causing us problems.
Yes, yes, yes.
So this is, I think, the worst case scenario for us, probably the best case scenario
for the planet,
for like whatever. But that being said, if you look at the other story, and which I feel like you're someone who is more familiar with that other story than I am, you know that there is this very potentially tragic, poignant opportunity, possibility.
Yeah.
Because we're so interconnected now, and because we can get messages to each other instantaneously.
Yeah.
If there were a simple kind of E equals MC squared equation, a viral equation for people to reconnect with the planet.
Yeah.
And reprioritize.
Yes.
And someone could articulate it, or a group of people could articulate it, or it could be articulated through music or art, then that wouldn't take very long to spread all around the entire planet. And meaning that it's weird how we're always like 3 days away from a completely harmonious, perfect, beautiful place. 3 days away.
Yeah.
It's 3 days of people being like, oh, money's, oh, yeah, I just don't want my stuff. If everyone, everyone somehow, again, fantasy world here, but everyone was like, I don't really want my stuff anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, you can live in my house. Oh, you can have my car. I don't really care about it anymore. You can have all of my islands and my, and everyone did that somehow. A virus broke out that made people deeply selfless, then we would have enough for everybody.
Absolutely.
And the world would turn into some kind of insane planetary festival that wouldn't end.
Yeah. And so it's just a matter of like, are we going to like do that for ourselves and like, you know, take the boss's increasingly harsh emails to heart and like change the way we do things? Are we going to wait and like get ourselves fired, you know? And because either way, I feel optimistic that like, I mean, nature knows what it's doing. We're part of nature. It's going to be what it is. It's going to be perfect, you know? But it's like up to us whether we want to change our lives now or like keep living in hell.
So as a musician and a traveler and a nomad, you are encountering the people before the internet, before the Instagram, before the tweets, before, so you, and I, when I was touring, that was one of the things I loved so much. It, and even, and though the sample size, so to speak, that I was encountering is based on people who are coming to see me do stand up, and therefore not necessarily an accurate way to really get a sense of what's happening in the world, I would always leave tours thinking like, it's way better than we think it
is. Yes, yes,
yes. Have you gotten that sense, or have you gotten any messages like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, like, doing that plant medicine tour was like one, I mean, like you said, like it, there's a kind of a filtration system in place, like just the kind of person that would show up at an event that's like advertised as like a plant medicine tour, you know, there's like some self-selecting factors at play there. And that was certainly like an extremely optimism inspiring experience, just to get to go to like 70 cities in the US and see people who are like devoting their lives to like harmonizing with nature and like making locally grown herbal medicines available to people. So that was rad. But also, I've had vastly different qualities of touring experience, like opening for like a super brutal like black metal band and like traveling in the back of their van, and like, you know, the crowds were coming to see them.
Wait, what band was that?
Called Zaster. X-A-S-T-H-U-R.
That's one thing I missed when I was researching this somehow. I'm sorry I missed that. But also, that's a thing where, like, if I had to, like, I would never have guessed that.
It was beautiful. It was, like, and the people that I met on that trip, like, that was so optimism inspiring too, in like this whole other way where it's like, you know, this sector of society that I think carries a lot of stigma and in some ways of like intentionally, like aesthetically anyway, like alienated themselves and like want to be perceived as like the blackest hearts of America, you know, but it's like just actually hanging out with them. I'm like, oh my God, you guys are like so sweet.
Sweeties.
Like such sweeties.
Yeah.
And care so much and just have such strong feelings. Like, and that's why you come to like have every cell of your body vibrated by sound. Like, it's really cool. It's like sound healing, you know?
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, and also like if you think you that stuff is not religious music, then you've never been there. You're making contact with God. It's just like that side of God, you know, that's a special taste. People want to hang out with Shiva. Love to.
Hell yeah. You know? I do.
You do. I no offense to Shivites, and certainly no offense to the destroyer of worlds, but I'm more of like a Vishnu Buddha person right now. No offense.
Fair enough.
No, and that's okay, but I certainly get it. Like, it's a beautiful and real and authentic assessment of life as it is. And if you I was just looking, like I saw some clip popped up of one of Rogan's shows where someone was pointing out, listen, if you are want to grow beans, you're going to have to get rid of all that, whatever was living in the bean fields.
Right.
You're going to kill a lot of stuff. You're going to kill a lot of little furry friends.
Yeah.
And so, you know, somehow people don't want to like look at that particular phase of the cycle of energy that we're in.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was like a very zealous vegan for like 10 years. And then like at some point that dawned on me. It was really when I started getting into plant intelligence and like and farming a lot, and like I was like, oh wow, like death is just a really inherent part of the cultivation of any life. Like if you're growing organic vegetables and a bunny comes into your garden wanting to eat your cabbage, like the farmer's gonna shoot that little bunny. And like even if something looks like a vegan meal on your plate, like there's a lot of plant and animal death. And sometimes, I mean, if you're not sourcing your vegetables responsibly, a lot of human illness and death, like if you're looking at like Monsanto crops and pesticides, like it's also so much more complicated than we like to think it is.
Isn't that it, though? It's that's the main thing, is it's like it's nuanced.
Yeah.
It's so nuanced that the black and white perception of the world is not an accurate.
Yeah, it's always going to be wrong.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
It's in, because we're dealing with not just like the fact that the millions of different variables that go into getting anything that you're eating or drinking to you involve some
fossil
level
fuels,
of suffering.
Yeah. It's all pretty entangled and gnarly right now.
I think even if we remove civilization from the planet, evaporate human beings altogether, you're still dealing with like you know, fungus that can get into the brains of crickets and, you know, make them climb up onto trees yes. and like explode. And
oh, yeah.
This is not an invitation. Therefore, fuck it. I think it's more along.
Be the fungus.
Yeah. Be the fungus. Be the. And by the way, I have friends who, you know, their point of view on the thing is a mystical version of that, which is like, listen, hippie. Mm-hmm. You want your global Burning Man? Mm-hmm. Okay, you do that. But what we're going to do is accelerate the apocalypse because it's better that way.
Yeah.
And not in the sense of like literally like do some kind of ISIS shit, but more along the lines of just like
just, let's just push it. Like that's going to happen. Like the scales need to tip at some point. So let's just get it over with.
Yeah, if we have to throw up, let's throw up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And unfortunately, the throw up they're talking about is literally a kind of like I hate it. And I think it's, to me, it's like, fine, you do that. Mm-hmm. But my feeling is I think many of us are getting this sense, there's something right in front of us. Your version of it is, I think there's a way to cure diabetes. Mm-hmm. My version of it is, I think there's some kind of like mimetic, viral, super condensed philosophy that has yet to be articulated that will cause a kind of like massive decentralization, a massive release of attachment to the stuff that people are attached to.
Yeah.
And all the other stuff will fall into place naturally.
Yeah.
A kind of nonviolent revolution, yes. as Bob Thurman puts it. But if you are sort of like, let's imagine, and this is a really terrifying story that Bob Thurman actually told, which was that apparently the Buddha went to visit, I don't know, Indra, I can't remember which god, maybe Brahman, God, for just for the sake of
somebody important,
not being like, I don't know, accurate. God. So Buddha, in the process of waking up, sitting under the Bodhi tree, goes and visits God with the intent of asking God, how do I get rid of suffering on this planet? How do I help it so I can alleviate the suffering of all sentient beings? And God, seeing Buddha, says, and all the gods are, he's like in this like, you know, royal palace, and all the gods are there. We've got all of them. Vishnu, Shiva, Kali, they're all hanging out, Ganesh, and God, I think it was Indra, but I can't, anyway, God sees Buddha's like, hey, you don't have an appointment, basically, like, I want to talk to you, but I'm doing something right now, so I'll talk to you later. So Buddha goes back to the Bodhi tree, and then God appears and says, listen, I heard your question, and I got to tell you something that I couldn't say in front of the gods, which is, I didn't make this. I was just the first one here.
Oh, wow. It's like one of those party games.
Yeah.
Who done it? Wow, yeah. I love that.
And then the younger gods, the gods started appearing and they treated me like daddy because I was the oldest one. And I let them think I'm their dad, but I'm not. And I don't know who did it or what it is. So maybe you can figure it out for me.
I love that.
So if you were the one who suddenly came into this unfortunate situation, as Robert Anton Wilson puts it, by the time the final trick of the Illuminati is you realize you're a member, it's too late to get out. Mm-hmm. There's just a gradual sort of like process of being like groomed to the point of suddenly you're like, oh shit, I am in the Illuminati. Oh shit, it's real. But then I think there's another trick after that, which is you realize you're the leader of the Illuminati because no one else would ever want to do it except you. And now you find yourself in this really difficult predicament, which is that you have to figure out a way to do what's best for everything on the planet, not just people. And what would you do? What would be your solution if you suddenly realize, like, shit, man, not only am I the one deactivating the bomb, I'm the one, like, talking to the person deactivating the bomb, telling them how to do it. What do we do is what I'm asking you.
What do we do? Damn. That's a big question.
You're the leader of the Illuminati.
Wow.
Congratulations.
I guess it's all about, like, realizing that you, too, are the leader of the Illuminati, like, it's like really like I would want to like immediately deflect that projection and say like, I am and so are you. I feel like that's okay. Like the defining age, the defining factor of like this age of like spiritual awakening is like we can't look to each other for that kind of authority anymore. Like it's like all about like realizing, and I think that's why like Buddhism is like really enjoying this like resurgence right now in like modern times. And I think it's like at the heart of mystical Christianity too, is just like, it's what everybody's been saying for a long time that has gotten twisted into all kinds of different shit. Like, it's like, I am God and so are you. Like, I'm saying this not as like a narcissistic power trip, right, but like I'm just embodying a quality of presence that is possible, and like you all need to do that yourself. Like, I can like share what I have seen in like visionary states and like what God has told me, what I have told myself when I'm like in my like highest power. But like what works for me isn't necessarily what works for you. I don't think, right, it's like, yeah, I don't know. I guess
very wise.
It's very
leader.
Interesting to get to just be asked that question and to witness the amount of like panic that arises in me instantly. It's, yeah, like, no. Like, don't do that. Like,
yeah.
Which is fascinating because I'm sure, do you experience that? Like, I mean, you're someone who like puts yourself out there, like that a lot of people look up to as a leader and like an authority on like spirituality.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's, how do you deal with that?
I deal with it. I've dealt with that in different phases of realizing that is a phenomena that happens.
Yeah.
So right now, the way I'm dealing with it is I keep thinking of this story I heard about Gandhi. Stop me if you've heard this story, which is that a mother brings her child to Gandhi and says, he won't stop eating sugar. Can you help? I can't make him stop. And Gandhi said, we'll come back in a month. And so she comes back in a month. And Gandhi looks at the kid and says, you stop eating sugar. And the mother's like, it took you a month to tell him to stop eating sugar? And Gandhi says, well, I wanted to make sure I could stop eating sugar.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think of like in relation to this sort of like realization that in some way, shape, or form, we're all interconnected in this beautiful matrix of responsibility. We're all nodes in the web Indra, net of Indra, the jeweled net of Indra. And I think of Jean-Paul Sartre, who said, anything you do, you give permission for the world to do.
Yes.
So what that would mean would be, if I were, or you were, or any one of us wanted to do this insane and very anxiety, potentially anxiety-provoking thought experiment of imagining that we were the leader of this or that. You call it whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah.
We were God. We were Buddha. We were this or that. And we kind of like, unfortunately, got a little high on our own identity to the point where the world that normally we would be in some way, shape, or form harmonizing got a little out of balance. It's like waking up in the morning and realizing that you let the dogs weren't in the kennel and now they've shit all over the house. And it's like, what do we do?
So,
in this case, I think it's a very simple solution, which is if you can't stop using plastic bottles all the time, if you can't stop driving more than you need to drive, if whatever the thing is that you have analyzed as being the problem of the world, if you can't stop it, we're all doomed. Forget it. We're done. Forget it. So if you can't be compassionate, if you can't be more gentle, if you can't be kinder and in a real pragmatic way, because those things are non-quantifiable. If you can't stop eating beef, if you can't stop doing the obvious shit, smoking cigarettes, drinking booze all the fucking time, if you can't stop destroying your body, then the planet's done, because everything's going to reflect you.
Right. You're the microcosm.
And since the plague of narcissism has swept across the West and every single one of us are really dealing with a very painful situation that is human selfishness, then I think the answer must be,
to, instead of imagining people are going to stop being narcissistic, selfish, self-absorbed, Instagramming, fame hungry, money, and I'm talking about myself, you know, here, like, since Sun Tzu says, know the fucking bat terrain. If you don't know the terrain, you're dead
meat.
So I know my terrain.
Yeah.
Selfish, aggressive tendencies, and I lazily leave lights on and use plastic bottles and don't recycle when I can.
Yeah.
And I used to eat beef all the fuck and all this stuff. It's like, first, all right, what can I do here?
Yeah. I feel you, man. Yeah, like I'm like a musician, and on some level that sounds so nice, but then like the reality is like I make my living driving and flying around the planet, burning fossil fuels and like peddling plastics, like on some level, you know, like buy my LP, you know, and it's like, what's that made of and how did I get here? It's like there are so many levels to it, and I'm very, very intrigued to just like apply all of my like big picture thinking to like my little life and see like, okay, like how can I actually do like much, much better and like preserve the thing that feels sacred and essential and like what I actually want to be doing while like cutting down on all those other things that I want nothing to do with in theory, you know, but it's like, it's a real predicament we've gotten ourselves into where we all need money to function and,
well, we think we do.
We think we do.
And it seems like we do. And like all that stuff, because the mind is like, my mind at least right away does go to like, well, I know what I'm going to do.
Right.
I'm going to give it all away.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take the family. We'll figure out a way to get them to let us into Bhutan. And I'll just go live in Bhutan.
Right.
I'll just go be a hermit. And my wife, of course, would be like, well, I guess we're going to put you in the mental hospital. You're having a manic episode, Duncan. You know what I mean? But that is what my manic mind goes to.
Right, right, right.
When it's like, actually, there's really one thing I'll tell you, and when you say things like this, you sound obnoxious because you're sounding corrective. I'm saying, if there is an apocalypse happening right now, and if the apocalypse is the sum total of all phenomena within the apocalypse breaking down, then you can only handle the part of the apocalypse that you are sitting in. You don't have to worry about the rest of the apocalypse. The rest of the apocalypse will take care of itself.
Right.
So if we're gonna do an apocalypse, then let's make our part of the apocalypse as gentle and sweet.
Wow.
Like there's like your dream when the angels and the butterflies were there. Let's make it like that. Or I heard once there's a book of like, there's a book of like the last things, the black box recordings of planes crashing.
Oh my God.
And one of them was the pilot just started singing a lullaby.
Wow. It's like the end of Titanic. That part is always the one that kills me when like the fiddler is like,
that's right.
One more time.
That's
they're
right.
All like, it's been an honor playing with you.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I want to go down too.
Yeah.
It's like what you just said is like the kind of shadow flip side of that Jack Kornfield thing you talk about all the time about like tending to your patch
tend to the part
garden.
Of the garden you can touch.
Tend to the part of the apocalypse you can touch.
That's right. and the thing is, really, what is the apocalypse? It's the lifting of the veil. It's the grand final realization of our own interconnectivity.
Yeah.
And that isn't
and it's pretty trippy if like anything the Bible has to say about it is true. It's like a pretty wild ride.
Pretty wild ride. But you know, all you know, that shit aside, and again, that's more mind stuff. The reality is it's like you can do an assessment of your own life.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to move to Bhutan. You don't have to become a vegan. You don't have to become a vegetarian. You don't have to cancel your tour. You don't have to whatever. But there is like,
there's nuance. And actually, like, you know, hearing you say that, which is such a reflection of where I go to in my mind, like all the fucking time, like, well, I should just become a nun and like a Buddhist monk, like sitting on a mountaintop and like renounce everything. But I'm like, actually, like, I feel like my karma in this lifetime is about like integration and how to like be in and of this like fucking crazy like urban matrix.
Yeah.
While like really cultivating the inner peace and like modeling that for people and like trying and failing to model that well, like in the chaos of the modern world. And I feel like Ram Dass talks about that, about like why he lived in New York City. You know, he's like, this is like the hottest fire I could imagine. Like, it would be easy to like be up on a mountaintop chilling. Like, I'm here to be like transmuted by this like burning hot alchemical fire.
Yeah. And I think so.
Yeah.
And I think the cave desire is like, sorry, that's not
available to you. Like that, it sounds like an easy way out. Like,
you just don't get to do that.
And like, bless everyone who is like sitting in caves meditating and praying for world peace right now. Like, we need them, and that's like, that's a very specific role in the global ecosystem that I'm super glad certain individuals are holding down. But when I think about like what I'm here to do in this lifetime, it's like, I'm supposed to be having nuanced conversations with myself about like, is this like for the greater good? You know, even though I'm like burning hella fossil fuels and selling plastic, like, does the music make it worth it? Do like the human interactions I'm having around the music make it worth it? And it's like, yeah, right now, yes. And I want to get better at like balancing the scales so that it's even more of like a clear fuck yeah, like win-win situation.
Well, but yeah,
we incarnated in a time where like basically just existing is like inherently you're part of the problem.
Sure.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. And you're fine. Like, yeah, I mean, my God, like to happy birthday. It would suck if you stopped flying and touring. It would suck for a lot of people who really want to like have that experience of listening to your music live. Yeah. And like, there is not a tricking yourself responsibility in that,
totally.
Which is that
you
were given.
If you stopped podcasting because you're in Bhutan. Yeah.
You were given talent, and you were given a voice, and then you were given visions, and then you were given the good fortune that brought you to a place where you are now a professional artist living off of your art, which is already
a miracle
of miracles. And so therefore it's like to then suddenly abandon your duties is similar to that Bhagavad Gita, Krishna going off into the forest. It's like, no,
yeah,
you have to fight.
Yeah, that actually, when you just described that, it sounds like that would be extremely ungrateful of me to just be like, yeah, well, thanks for the gift, but like, fuck you. Like, I don't want your gifts. Yeah.
What cave, by the way? And then you get to the cave and like, you know, they're all filled up and people are like, sorry, we waited 1,000 incarnations to get into this freaking cave. You go play music right now. But we need you to play music for us, you know, because that's like, whether it's the Titanic is sinking or whether the Titanic is about to transform into a interconnected sentient techno hive that sort of opens up portals to various parts of the multiverse that many of us have already been taking excursions into through plant medicine or you know, various psychedelics or visionary trances. The reality of the situation is you are where you're at. And I love to think of like, man, what if people got airdropped into this dimension in the way people got airdropped into like World War II, except something happened where we all got amnesia, meaning that we sort of like have a, like, we don't really remember our marching orders so much, except we know we're here and that there seems to be a need for kindness. And then I don't know after that, you know, but yeah, I'm sorry to hold you. Oh, I'm keeping you a little too long. You didn't answer my question. You are the, and P.S., you did make me kind of like a co-Illuminati leader with you, which I appreciate. But because I am a co-Illuminati leader, therefore sharing the same power as you, I use my power to remove myself from the Illuminati, and I make sum total of the Illuminati, the leader, and therefore, meaning that you, and I remove from you the ability to make me anything to do with these lunatics, the cultists, whatever they are, whatever you guys are. What do we do? Give us our marching orders if you had to. And I don't mean to put you on the spot. And whatever you say, of course, this is just a fun game. But what do we do? Say, buy my album.
Listen to my album on Spotify and help me rack up fractions of pennies so that I can sell more plastics.
Spoken just like the Illuminati.
And like, just love. Like, love more.
Do you feel bad for saying love more?
I do. It's not a popular opinion. I mean, I feel not bad, but like slightly scared, because when you look through history and look at the people who have like gotten up in front of people and said, like, hey, everybody just love each other and, like, don't kill each other and just try to be a good person, they usually get murdered.
Right.
Like, Jesus Christ, like Martin Luther King, you know, it's a surprisingly unpopular opinion to just be like, yo, love everyone. I mean, Ram Dass, he's doing all right.
Well, I mean, maybe it's a spoiler. I don't know. Maybe, like, it's kind of like, listen, yes, but don't tell me the end of fucking Game of Thrones. I want to watch the whole thing. So the love thing, maybe it's just like, give me a break. People came here not to be good, to find that on their own. They don't need you to say it. But I'm not, I do think that that is pretty much it.
It's pretty much it. I mean, it sounds like it's kind of boring because, like, we've heard it before or something, but it's like, but actually, like, it's, I mean, and it's something that you have to experience for yourself. Like, it doesn't work for me anyway to just, like, sit in a room and have somebody, like, tell me to love more. I'm like, it's, I have to go through the waves of, like, my own self-created suffering to, like, arrive again and again to be, like, coughed up on the beach of love, like, by the turbulent ocean of my own suffering.
Wow.
Again and again. It's just like, oh, yeah. Gasping prayer, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just about love, you know? Yeah. And then you get sucked back into the ocean.
Yeah,
know?
The whale eats you again. No, it isn't. We're going back down.
It's about money and power.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I have
Instagram followers.
Yes, it is. And but here's the thing. This is the beauty of it all, is it's like the whole thing, if there really were some kind of like intent to set up a hypnotic grid of narcissism, the grid is easily hacked, meaning that, oh, okay, well, we got to revise the terminology, you know, which is like, okay, the love thing, it's a little confusing, though it is pretty much like, to me, the most simple. I mean, it's like for me, my son, it's like I look at my son and I feel completely connected to the fundamental goodness of the universe and also simultaneously deeply inspired to be a better person. And to, by that, I mean to stop poisoning myself as much as possible and to stop hurting people around me. And then to make my family, the my home a sacred space, and not in a cheesy way. But
I think about that all the time with like having a baby. Like the biggest reason that I would want to have a baby is just to have like a really intense motivator to be like the best version of myself as possible, because knowing that like this empathic sponge is like being deeply imprinted by my energy like all the time. Like I feel that just even like with being around other babies, and
yes,
it's like such a responsibility, and they're such a clear mirror. Like instantly, if you just like zone out and like get on your phone, they're like, what? Like, what are you doing? Like,
what
where'd you go?
That?
Yeah. It's wild.
It's wild, but you are doing that. And that's the thing, is like you do have a baby. You do have a baby. You do have that. We all do.
Yes, it's the new planet Earth. I've actually had like 3 people in as many months ask me if I was pregnant. Like
what?
Totally different situations, different strangers, like have said something like, so when's the baby due?
What?
Or like, so how far along are you? Or like, how's the baby?
You do not look pregnant.
I have like a bit of like a Venusian belly, but it's not like remarkable. And so just the fact that 3 strangers in 3 months like really like overstepped like a pretty clear like social boundary to like assume very certainly that I was pregnant, I was like, it must be like an energy thing.
That's
like, it must be like a glow. And like when I think about it, I am a fucking pregnant mama. Like I've got so many creative like just projects in my belly, my sacral chakra, and I'm like, yeah, like I feel like a cosmic mother to the whole new world.
Well, let me tell you, leader of the Illuminati, your great cosmic mother, as a dumb person, unfortunately, we need to spawn to have that moment of like, oh my God, this being depends on me. My decisions every day directly impact this sweet, sweet soul that can't do anything, can't hold a spoon to his mouth, can't do anything.
Yeah.
Such a sweet soul, deserves all my love and attention.
Yes.
And fuck whoever I used to be and all my selfish things, because this baby is worth so much more than that.
Yes.
And similarly, if you spend any amount of time hanging out with the planet,
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the planet as it is, and I think this would be one of the most heartbreaking things that could happen, and I think this is why they say when you have contact with the divine, there's a heartbreak to it, is we want to believe in this omniscient, omnipotent Krishna, this thing that cannot be hurt, this thing, and then maybe when you really get to meet that being, it's not saying, let me help you.
Mm-hmm.
It's saying,
help me.
Can you please help me?
Absolutely. It is such a reciprocal thing. Like, I feel that, like, going out into the forest or, like, you know, I think there's this urge to, like, go into nature to be healed. And that's, like, increasingly, like, when I go out into nature, like, she's like, yo, like, I've got a lot of grief to express, and, like, you can hear me. Can I just, like, wail to you for a while? And it's like, we can hold each other, you know, and she really appreciates that too. And it's like a, you know, we can role play and swap with each other. Like, she can be mama and then I can be mama. And it's
Yeah. I love that. Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah. We don't need to breed to have that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, that's a real heartbreaker when you realize, like, oh no, she's just like counting on you to, in a way that's not vengeful. It's not, it doesn't look like Kali. It doesn't look like the monster that you imagine, the wrathful thing. It's just a little baby that just wants to, like, be with you and loves you. Oh, what?
Yeah, and now
you can't be at war with it. And
yes.
Then now there's some reason to, like, figure it out on a real, anyway.
Yes, that's so cool.
I'm very excited to have met the leader of the Illuminati. I knew y'all were out there. And I hope that, like, you can maybe, I don't know, get the podcast numbers up a little bit. I'm also kind of interested in the Moog one, so... it'd be cool if you could send that over. Whatever you need me to do, I'll do. But
offerings will be required, but I'll see what I can do.
Okay.
My people will talk to your people.
How can people find you?
I have a website, which is johannawarren.com, and that links to all my music and other things that I'll be working on. I have many babies in my belly right now, so it's going to be an interesting couple of years.
Wonderful. But you got some shows coming up, right?
I do. I'm doing like a little West Coast tour. When will this be aired?
Next week or this week. I'm not sure which.
Great. If it isn't June 16th yet, I have a little West Coast tour coming up, just super chill house shows as I drive my car up the coast to get re-registered in the state of Oregon.
Cool.
But yeah, I tour a lot, and I'll be around.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
What a pleasure.
What an
honor.
It's
been wonderful meeting you. Likewise. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Really fun. Much thanks to Johanna Warren for coming on the DTFH. Don't forget to go to our website, johannawarren.com. Also, much thanks to Blue Chew and Raycon for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH, and thank you for listening. I love you guys, and I hope that you have the most incredible weekend, week, month, year, and eternity that you've ever had. I'll see you next time. Hare Krishna.